Hi, you're listening to Beyond the Fringe, and we are talking with Mr. Colin Blunstone of The Zombies. How are you doing, Colin?
I'm fine. Great to talk to you, Sal.
Now, you're coming to San Luis Obispo, and we'll get to that in just a little bit, but I just want to start off with, you are, of course, the lead singer of The Zombies, and The Zombies were one of the bands that, in the peak of the British invasion, you somehow, right away, right from the get-go, you punched a hole, and you broke through right when you were very young. In fact, you were basically just out of school, from what I've read.
It's true. We were, yeah.
Now, how did that feel at such a young age to just hit it really big?
Well, it's really strange, you know, but when you're young, I think you don't question what's happening to you so much. For me, it was a wonderful adventure. I was traveling around the world, singing the songs I loved with my friends, you know, and it was just a wonderful adventure. And I didn't really question it that much. It's only looking back that I can see that that's not a typical teenage way of life, you know. We were 18 when we recorded She's Not There, and we were 19 when it went to number one in the States. So we were pretty young for that sort of thing to happen. But it was great. And, of course, all British musicians, however young they are, they all really want to get to America because America's the home of rock and roll. That's where it all started. And we couldn't wait to get over to the States, although we were a little anxious about how we might be received because to us, as I said before, America is the home of rock and roll. And we, to some extent, have always copied, although it goes through a kind of a British filter. We've always copied the States. I'm always hugely influenced by American musicians. So it was an especially thrilling to be able to get over to New York in the Christmas of 64-65.
Do you have any explanation as to why you possibly broke through? Was it the unique sound? Because, you know, She's Not There and Tell Her No. You had that electric piano going really well, and on top of the guitars and, of course, the great melody line and the hooks. So do you have any explanation as to how The Zombies broke through, or are you just lucky?
Well, I think luck is always a part of any success in the music business. But I think they were great songs. I think She's Not There is a timeless classic. And, of course, it was a very different sound because the core instrument is an electric piano on She's Not There, and in some other tracks it would be an electric organ. So it is a slightly different sound because, especially when we started the band in 61, all bands were three guitars. They didn't have keyboards. So we were kind of ahead of the game. And there were one or two bands by the time we were making records that had keyboards. The Animals come to mind and Manfred Mann. But it was still fairly rare for bands to have keyboards. And certainly when we started, it was incredibly rare. And I had to really, well, I think we all, but in particular, I had to talk Rod into playing keyboards. He originally, when we had our first rehearsal, Rod Argent, was going to be the lead singer, and I was going to be the rhythm guitarist. But we were 15 years old, and we had a break on a Saturday morning, had a coffee break, and he went over to an old, broken-down old piano, and he played Nut Rocker by Bee Bumble and the Stingers. Hmm. And I was absolutely, I don't know if you know that song, but it was a hit at the time in 1961. And it's a sort of a rock take on a classical piece. And I was astounded how well he could play. I'd only just met him, well, this first rehearsal for the band. And I just sat down next to him and I said, you know, you really should play keyboards in this band. But he wanted it to be a rock and roll band, and he saw that as being three guitars, and he wasn't at all keen. Until at the end of the rehearsal, I was just singing to myself. I was the rhythm guitarist. I was just having a little sing. And he said, I tell you what, if you'll be the lead singer, I'll play keyboards. And that was how The Zombies came about, just a chance thing like that. And from there, we built up a small local following, which grew over the years till 1964. We won a very big rock competition, which led to a recording deal with Decca. And we were introduced to a producer called Ken Jones. And he was just having a chat with us about 2 weeks before we went into the studio, and he said, you know, you could always write something for this session if you wanted. And then he went on and talked about other things, but it struck a chord with Rod. And he went home and came back a couple of days later, and he'd written She's Not There. I think we all knew it was a really special song, and that was one of the first things we recorded on our first night in a proper studio.
Well, no one told me about her, the way she lied. Well, no one told me about her, how many people cried. But it's too late to say you're sorry. How would I know? Why should I care? Please don't bother trying to find her. She's not there.
Okay, your second album, Odyssey and Oracle, is basically an evolutionary leap. It's only, what, two years later, but it's an evolutionary leap. And one possible reason for that is because you were talking about the electric piano and the organ, but you expanded also to include harpsichord and mellotron. Would you say those were significant improvements or at least advances on your earlier material?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that we were always looking for interesting sounds to add to tracks. But, you know, in the way that I was just talking about chance playing and luck playing a part in things, we followed the Beatles into Abbey Road. They'd just finished Sgt. Pepper, and we were the next band in there. And the mellotron was left behind by the Beatles. If they hadn't left it behind, we probably wouldn't have thought of mellotron. And when you listen to Odyssey and Oracle, there's mellotron all over it, so it would have been a different album. I believe it was John Lennon's mellotron, but it certainly was left behind by them. It was a bizarre situation because we were picking up percussion instruments off the floor that had been left there by the Beatles. They've literally just finished Sgt. Pepper. We were working in the same studios with the same engineers, and it was wonderful for us because the Beatles had made advances in recording technique while they were recording Sgt. Pepper, and we were able to benefit from all those recording technique advances that they'd made. So we were really in the right place at the right time. Abbey Road then, and now it's still a wonderful studio, but then it was probably considered one of the best, if not the best, studios in the world. And we had Peter Vince and Jeff Emmerich engineering, who also worked on Sgt. Pepper, and they were just sensational recording engineers.
And you even used the same four-track recording deck that the Beatles used for Sgt. Pepper.
We did. I mean, they've managed to, I'm not even sure I understand completely myself, but they've managed in the Beatles sessions to link two four-track machines, and it didn't turn it into an eight-track machine. You lost one track. It turned it, in a way, into a seven-track machine, which is that gave us three extra tracks. We were used to recording on a four-track machine, and we were able to overdub harmonies and second keyboard parts that we would have never been able to do without the advances that the Beatles made at Abbey Road. And I should also say that I think Rod and Chris White's writing was just going through a particularly rich vein at that moment. I mean, every song on Odyssey and Oracle is just a timeless classic, I think. Really wonderful songs.
Oh, absolutely. Now, the thing that surprised me about Odyssey and Oracle is it was self-produced. How were you allowed to produce your second album by yourself?
Well, I think it was one of the reasons that we wanted to record that album at that time was we wanted to try and produce it ourselves. Basically, it was Rod Argent and Chris White that produced it. We'd worked for nearly 3 years with one producer, Ken Jones, who was a fine producer, and he produced those early tracks, She's Not There and Tell Her No. But he seemed to want to keep the sound the same as it was in 1964, rather than to let it evolve and be more what we were playing at the time. He wanted us to, in a way, not hold us back, but hold the sound back, if you see what I mean. I think the sounds were richer, the ideas were more sophisticated, and we'd had two or three singles where things had gone quite wrong in the studio and in the mixing process. And it was very much part of our idea that we would work without a producer. Now, why CBS allowed us to do that, I can't tell you. I mean, they certainly didn't give us very much money. You know, they gave us £1,000, which even in those days wasn't very much money to be recording in Abbey Road. So they didn't stand to lose a lot of money. And I guess they just decided to, you know, give us our chance at working without a producer.
Sad how brown her eyes. I knew spring, her voice she spoke to me. I knew her when summer was her crown, and autumn sad how brown her eyes.
Now, you talked about the explosion of creativity on that second album, and there are some slight indications of your singles between your first two albums, but how do you explain the diversity of like Friends of Mine and Butcher's Tale and just the vast assortment of tracks on Odyssey and Oracle?
Absolutely. I mean, it's funny you should mention those two tracks, because I'll tell you a secret. I was going to sing Butcher's Tale, but when they played it to me, it's a wonderful song, but I just couldn't see how it could fit on an album with Friends of Mine. That was the track that I quoted. I said, how can this fit on an album with Friends of Mine? And I said, I don't think I can sing Butcher's Tale. And so Chris got to sing his own song, and he does a great job on it, probably better than I could have done. But that's the reason that I'm not singing that song, because I just couldn't see it on an album with, the rest of the material, Care of Self 44 and, as you said, Friends of Mine and lots of the other tracks. I just couldn't see how that would fit on there. But now, when you listen to it now, it just seems to work, even though the tone of the songs can be totally different. Somehow, I guess it's the playing, we've got the same drama bass and so forth, and we've got the same vocals going through it, and that somehow, and the wonderful engineers at Abbey Road, just sort of pulls it all together. You never know when you're recording an album if you're recording tracks, and it's only at the end when you realize whether it will all pull together and sound as though it's of one piece rather than 10 diverse tracks that don't have anything in common with one another.
When you listen to the playback of the whole album that first time, what was your immediate reaction?
Well, I thought it was the best we could possibly do at that time. I honestly thought that was the best we could do. I would never compare it with other people's work. I mean, I think there are people better qualified than me to review and write criticize and whatever. But I thought that was the best that we could possibly do, and I felt quite pleased with it at the end. Sadly, it wasn't a commercial success when it was released. And in those days, when careers were so dominated by singles, it was going to change. In the next couple of years, albums would become all important. But at that point, it was very much a singles market. And we released a single in the UK, I remember it was Care of Self 44, and it wasn't a commercial success, and it led to the band coming to the conclusion that maybe it was time for us to move on and work on other projects. And with the benefit of hindsight, I think it probably was a bit early to be making that decision, but we were young, we'd been working every night for 3 years, we were tired, and it seemed as though there wasn't a market for us. But again, looking back, we now realize that we always had a hit record in one country in the world the whole time we were together. It's amazing, really, because, there was no internet, so it's very difficult to know when you were being successful. But if there had been an internet, we would have known that we were actually a comparatively a successful band. But we felt that we weren't successful, and how you perceive your situation is the all-important thing. We thought we weren't successful, and it was time to move on.
Now, one of the most ironic moments in rock history is you record this album, you put it out, then the Zombies disband, and then a year later, Time of the Season becomes the biggest thing you've ever done.
It's bizarre, isn't it? It's really bizarre.
how do you think things would have been different if you had stuck it out for those 9 months and then just let everybody
well,
catch
we'll
up with you?
Know. I think some of the guys were probably ready to move on anyway. As I said, we're very young and we'd been worked very hard, and I think probably some guys needed a break, and there were plenty of ideas of doing other things. And you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
But no one ever knows what might have happened. It could have been interesting. For me, I'd quite like to have known what we might have recorded next. Because, as I said before, I think Rod and Chris were in a particularly rich writing vein, and I would have been very interested to hear what the next album would have been like. But we'll never know. And we all went off and started. Rod and Chris got involved in Argent, and I eventually got involved in a solo career, which was quite successful over here. Sadly, I never had any success in North America, but in the UK and in Europe, I had many hits as a solo artist. So it wasn't as if we fell off the edge of a cliff, you know. I mean, there were other things to do, and we just got on with it. But it is an interesting thought that if we'd have stayed together, what would have happened? But we'll never know.
When we're all in a crowd and you catch your eye, and then you both smile, I feel so good inside. And when I'm with her, she talks about you, the things that you say, the things that you do. It feels so good to know two people so in love, so in love.
They are friends of mine, they are friends of mine, and they've got something that's so hard to find. They are friends of mine, they are friends of mine, and they've got something you don't often find.
She takes your hand when the world stays outside. That's something to see, that's nothing to hide. And when I feel bad, when people disappoint me, that's when I need you to help me believe.
It feels so good to know two people so in love, so in love.
They are friends of mine, they are friends of mine, and they've got something that's so hard to find. They are friends of mine, they are friends of mine, and they've got something you don't often find.
So good to know two people so in love, so in love.
They are friends of mine, they are friends of mine, and they've got something that's so hard to find. They are friends of mine, they are friends of mine, and they've got something you don't often find.
Everybody in that band seemed to be very prolific. As you mentioned, Rod went and started Argent. They were pretty successful. You had a series of solo albums like 1 Year and Ennismore, and they were big in England, but America's usually, you know, a little slow sometimes. But then recently, the Zombies have got back together, you and Rod, and you've put out new material, including 2011's Breathe Out, Breathe In. Breathe Out, Breathe In.
Breathe Out, Breathe In, is it?
Breathe Out, Breathe In. And then, of course, 2015, just recently, you did Still Got That Hunger. And it was interesting on Still Got That Hunger. It almost seems like you're conflicted on the state of the band. First song is called Moving On, and then the second song is called Chasing the Past. So how would you...
Well, I don't think there's any hidden message there. That's just the title of the songs, really. But in 1999, I'd been touring for a couple of years, and I'd got some concert dates coming up, and I didn't have a keyboard player, and I didn't know whether Rod would want to tour again. He hadn't toured for some years, and I just thought I'd call him on the off chance, and I had 6 dates coming up, and he said, okay, I help you out for 6 dates, but that's it. I'm only doing 6 dates. And he enjoyed it so much, and so did I, that here we are 19 years later still touring. But from the very beginning, it was always our idea to write and record new material. We didn't want to just go out and play old tunes. And for many years, we toured as Colin Blunston and Rod Argent. We purposely didn't use the name The Zombies. It was never our idea to reform The Zombies. But promoters used to bill us as The Zombies. People at shows used to ask for zombie tunes. People in the media talked to us all the time about the media, and I talked to us all the time about The Zombies. And it got to a point where we thought, you know, who are we kidding here? You know, we keep fighting this zombie thing. And we eventually sat down and had a chat with the other two surviving original members, Chris White and Hugh Grundy. And we said, look, we're touring and we're being billed as The Zombies, even if we contractually ask them not to bill us as The Zombies. We're continually being asked to play zombie tunes. How would you feel if we officially were billed as The Zombies? And they gave us their blessing. And as I say, after about 7 or 8 years, we changed to The Zombies. I think originally it was The Zombies featuring Colin Blunton and Rod Argent and all sorts of things like that. It's just The Zombies now. And we still play the Zombies hits. We play a medley of songs from Odyssey and Oracle. And we play some obscure tracks from The Zombies as well. But at the same time, we will play brand new songs. And we're absolutely thrilled that not only do the classic tunes get a great reaction from concert audiences, but the new songs get just as strong reaction as well. And it's really encouraging and makes us want to go on and write and record new tunes, which we're just the cycle is just about to begin now. We're just thinking about songs now. So I would think there'll be an album between a year and 18 months from now, because that recording cycle is just starting.
We're looking forward to hearing that. How would you describe the difference in Still Got That Hunger and your earlier work?
The work from the 60s?
Yes.
Well, that's an interesting thought. I mean, the first album that we recorded, there were a lot of classic R&B tracks on there. So it wasn't all original material. Still Got That Hunger was all original material. But by the time we got to Odyssey and Oracle, of course, it was all original material. Funny enough, you know, there are a lot of similarities because we decided that we would rehearse extensively for Still Got That Hunger in the same way as we did for Odyssey and Oracle. Well, with Odyssey and Oracle, we had a small recording budget, as I said before, £1,000. And the only way we could record in Abbey Road was to really, really rehearse until we knew. We knew the songs backwards. We knew keys and arrangements. We're just looking for a performance. We're going to Abbey Road, and we record very quickly. It's the only way we can do it because we have such a limited budget. And we thought, you know, there is a special energy from recording practically live and knowing that you have... knowing that it would be a good idea to record quickly, which is what we did. We've still got that hunger. We went into a studio where it was possible for everyone to record at the same time, rather than people coming in, as is often done in modern recording, people come in separately and put their parts down. So we recorded Still Got That Hunger with everyone playing and with me singing live as well, and we kept those vocals. They're the vocals you hear. And the solos were played live. The only thing that was overdubbed is the backing vocals were overdubbed. So there are a lot of similarities between the way we recorded Odyssey and Oracle and Still Got That Hunger, because they both were, by recording standards, pretty much live albums. So rather than pointing out the differences, perhaps I can point out the similarities.
I'm moving on like a ship sailing windblown. Who can say where the rainbow may be found? Take my chance and I'll sail to tomorrow. April moon, can you tell me confusion. It's goodbye to trouble I'm leaving behind. In my life, no more grief nor sorrow. I won't cry for the past, for I've refound my freedom at last. I won't shy from this strife. What doesn't kill me will fill me with life. Soul may be bound. Who can tell where the journey may lead me? Who can say where the rainbow may be found? From the strife. What doesn't kill me will fill me with life. And I'm moving on to my dreams of tomorrow. Thrilled to be wherever my soul may be bound. Who can tell where the journey.
The Zombies are coming to a West Coast tour in this September, and you're stopping in San Luis Obispo. How did you end up stopping in San Luis Obispo? I'm always curious, bands that come here, because we're getting some great bands, and it's just it's new for us to have these, you know, big bands like you guys coming through. How did that happen? Do you know?
Well, I can say, first of all, that we love to play on the West Coast. It's a joy to play to the audiences out there. But in many ways, where we play is, to some extent, decided by management and agencies, really. I knew we were going to have a West Coast tour, and to a large extent, that's put together by managers and agents rather than us. But I'm really pleased that they've got us a West Coast tour, because I love to get over there.
Well, we love to have you. Now, you mentioned you're going to play some tracks off both your albums, or all of your albums, including your new ones. Is there any chance we'll hear some non-Zombies tracks from your solo work or from Argent?
We'll probably play some Argent. I'll be honest with you, I'm not absolutely sure what we're going to play. But I know what the backbone of it will be, and we will almost certainly play two or three Argent tunes. I don't think we'll play any solo material. We haven't been playing it recently anyway. We do from time to time, but just not at the moment. We sometimes play a little bit of Alan Parsons, because I recorded a lot with Alan. But it depends. You know, we haven't sat down and had the meeting to discuss the set list yet. But there'll be some great songs. Whatever we play, there'll be some real classics in there. And I think there'll be something for everyone. And I do hope that all your listeners will come out and see the show. It's a great band, and there's some classic tunes.
And I was going to ask you, how did you hook up with Alan Parsons?
Well, he was one of the engineers at Abbey Road when we recorded Odyssey and Oracle, so that's when I first met him. And then after that, I realized that we live quite close to one another, and for instance, we would often meet. There's a little village in London called Hampstead, and there's a pub in there called The Flask, and we both used to drink in there on a Saturday morning. And so we would always have a little chat when we were up there. And from that, when he started recording the project albums, he asked me to come in and sing on them. In fact, he asked me to sing on the first one, but ironically, I was living in California. I was living in Los Angeles, and I couldn't do it. So the first one I did was The Eagle Will Rise Again on the album Pyramid. And then after that, I recorded on 5 or 6 of the Parsons albums.
You were the
I was really thrilled to work with Alan. I love those albums.
You were the vocalist on Old and Wise, one of my favorite Alan Parsons tracks.
I was the vocalist on Old and Wise. What a beautiful song written by Eric Woolfson. I was working on something else with them, actually, and Eric said, I just want to play you something. We were in Abbey Road, and we walked into Studio 3, which is the studio where we recorded Time of the Season and the whole of Odyssey and Oracle, and also I recorded all my solo stuff in there as well, my early solo stuff. And he just sat down at the piano, and he played me Old and Wise. It's so beautiful. Eric was a great writer, and he was a very good vocalist as well. And it was a very moving experience to hear that song for the first time. It's so special.
When I'm old.
Okay, I have a silly question for you. Zombies are really big in culture now all the way around. Do you have any opinion on zombies in general and your part in it?
I've got a confession. When the name The Zombies was suggested by our original bass player, the very first bass player was a guy called Paul Arnold, who I went to school with, and it was because I knew him that I got invited into the band. He came up with the name. I didn't really know what a zombie was. Honestly, there was no zombie culture in 1961 that I was aware of. And it just, I don't think I was even very keen on the name, but the rest of the guys loved it. And it was very catchy, and it stuck. Without us thinking too much about what it really meant, I think some of the guys realized, you know, there was a mystique and an edge of danger to it. And all I can say is that it was catchy and it stuck. Since then, of course, there has been a whole zombie culture launched, and hopefully we played a small part in familiarizing people with the name Zombies. But it was from a position of innocence in the first place. And another confession, I've never seen a zombie movie. I've never seen a zombie TV show. I've never read a zombie magazine. So I'm not the best person to ask about zombies.
Okay. Do you imagine?
Although I am actually a zombie myself.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true. One of the originals. Too bad you're not getting royalties on all the zombie culture. That would be really nice.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, the current lineup of the Zombies includes Soren Koch or Koch. How do you say that?
I'm not too sure how you pronounce it.
Okay,
because it can come out as a rude word if you're not careful.
And you got Steve.
But he's Danish.
He's Danish.
And he's a wonderful musician, lovely guy. There was a tragedy in the band earlier this year that. Bass player, wonderful, Jim Rodford, who had been with us for 20 years, and before that he was a founder member of Argent with Rod. He was actually Rod's cousin. He was 19 years in the Kinks. He's just one of those guys. He's a magical player and also a wonderful person. And he had a terrible fall at home, and he just, one minute I was talking to him on a Friday night, Saturday morning, he died. And we had a tour starting up in the States in about 10 days' time, and we had to try and get over that tragedy on one hand, and then decide, are we going to tour or not? And we felt that Jim was a real trooper, and I'm sure he would have said the show must go on. And so we said, okay, we're going to tour in 10 days' time. We have to find a bass player. It was a miracle. We were introduced to Soren. He lives in Denmark, but he'd been over to see us play on two or three occasions. And it just happens, not only is he a great bass player, but he knew all our material. And so he came over and played with us. We went through the set once in England. And then we flew to New York, and the next time we played it, we were playing to an audience in concert in New York. And he was absolutely note perfect. I have no idea how he did it. He's also a sensational harmony singer. That was the challenge that we had, because we don't just need a bass player. We need someone who's a really good harmony singer as well. And he just picked up all the harmonies so quickly.
Wow.
So Soren, out of tragedy, we were so fortunate to be introduced to him.
And Jim's son, Steve, is your drummer.
Steve Rodford is on drums, and he's been with us for the whole 19 years of this incarnation of the Zombies. I'd worked with him on a solo album of mine, and it was really funny because Jim Rodford would never suggest his son. He just didn't think that was the gentlemanly way to do it. And Rod, who is Jim's cousin, wasn't familiar with Steve as a drummer, so it was only me that knew Steve as a drummer. And I said, well, I think we should try Steve, and he's fantastic. He's really, really good. So he's been with us for the whole 19 years.
Yeah, that must have been interesting, or just really nice to have a father-son rhythm section. That must have just really clicked.
Absolutely. And, I mean, I've talked to Steve about it, and he's just so grateful that he had that 19 years on the road with his father. What a magical experience that is, to travel the world playing great music with your dad, you know, who is a bass-playing icon. You know, he's played with so many big bands. As I said, the Kinks, the Animals. He's found a member of Argent. And, of course, he played with the Zombies for 19 years.
Yes, I saw him several times with the Kinks. He was he's a real integral part of the Kinks for the last period of their existence.
He was a really important part of the Kinks. I think he helped in a huge resurgence of interest in the Kinks because he's first is a very sophisticated musician, and he's very committed and energized, you know. You can't help but be influenced by his presence on stage, and that's why he was in such demand as a musician, because he is a wonderful musician and a great performer. So such a huge loss to the Zombies and to music lovers as a whole that he should have been, you know, in this tragic accident back in February.
Yeah, he kept Ray and Dave from killing each other. That's always an achievement.
I think, from what I can gather, that's probably true, yes. I think things did get a bit fiery at times. He didn't talk about the Kinks. Well, not personal things. He didn't talk about them a lot. But I just got a hint of sometimes it could get a little bit dangerous, especially on stage. There were one or two, you know, warring factions actually going on in the middle of concerts, which I find quite intriguing. must have been very interesting. You know, you're playing Madison Square Gardens and there's a cymbal being thrown 2 inches past your head or something like that. I had a great story about Dave Davis with the Kinks. They were playing, I don't know where, a big venue, and there was a keyboard solo, and the keyboard player was very drunk and he'd fallen asleep. So he's supposed to do his keyboard solo, and he's asleep. And Dave Davis went over to him and threw him and his keyboards off the stage. Ooh. Into the orchestra pit. And that was the last that was seen of him that night, at least. But I think these things were fairly common when the Kinks were playing. I think there's talk that they're going to reform, so I think it would be really interesting to see them play again. Sure, they'll be wonderful.
And a totally different energy with the Zombies, I hope.
Well, we do have a lot of energy on stage. I think maybe even more energy than we had in the 60s, ironically. But we do try to not beat one another up most of the time.
Most of the time. What's the best way for fans to get in touch with you?
There's Facebook pages and fan clubs, and they just go to the internet. I think it's comparatively easy to get in touch with us. And if that doesn't work, then I have Facebook pages myself. And I do, if people ask me a specific question, I do try and answer it. My only thing I would say is I'm not very computer literate, so if I miss it, it could be because I'm just not very good on computers, but I do try and answer people's questions.
I realize that I've been in your eyes some kind of fool. What I do, what I did, stupid fish, I drank the pool. I've been doing some dying, now I'm doing some trying. So say, don't mind, you let me off this time. I came into this scene when my dreams were getting bad. And who rides with the tide and who's glad with what it had? I've been doing some whining, now I'm doing some finding. So say, don't mind, you let me off
to you I'm blind. She's so bad that a doormat sees better times. That's the time to get back and think up some better line. I've been doing some growing, but I'm scared where you're going. So say you don't mind, you don't mind. You let me off this time.
Well, thank you, Colin Blunstone from the Zombies, for talking with us, and we are looking forward to seeing you in San Luis Obispo at the Fremont Theater in September. That's going to be a great show.
Thanks so much, Sal. Really looking forward to it, and thanks so much for having me on the show.
Anytime. Safe travels, and we're looking forward to the next album.
Okay. All the very best. Bye.
Take care.